Chapter 8. Skye was very much alive. Renaud, who was feeling the full force of her fury, could attest to that. After Renaud had made one of his self-serving comments, Skye had snapped. She had laced into the hapless Frenchman, her eyes bright with tears of rage as she tongue-lashed him for ruining the biggest discovery of her career. Renaud finally summoned up the courage to croak a protest. Skye had exhausted her repertoire and lung power by then and cut him short with a withering glare and a well-chosen word.
Idiot!
Renaud tried to play on her sympathy.
Can't you see I'm injured?
He held his bruised and lacerated hand.
It's your own stupid fault, she said coldly. How in God's name could you allow a man with a gun to come into this place? I thought he was a reporter. You have the brain of an amoeba. Amoebas don't think, they ooze.
Mademoiselle, please, Leblanc entreated. We have only so much air to breathe. Save your strength.
Save it for what? She pointed to the ceiling. It may have escaped your attention, but we are stuck under a very large glacier.
Leblanc put his finger to his lips. Skye glanced around at the cold and frightened faces and saw she was making the others even more miserable. She realized, too, that her tirade against Renaud was a product of her fear and frustration. She apologized to Leblanc and clamped her lips tightly together, but before she did so, she muttered, "He is an idiot." Then she went over and plunked down next to Rollins, the magazine writer, who was sitting with his back against a wall writing in a notebook. He had bunched a plastic tarp together and was using it to insulate his posterior from contact with the wet floor. She snuggled close for warmth, saying, "Pardon me for being forward, but I'm freezing." Rollins blinked in surprise, set the notebook aside, and then gallantly wrapped an arm around her shoulder.
"You were pretty hot a minute ago," he said.
"Sorry for losing my temper in front of everyone," she murmured.
"I don't blame you, but try to look on the bright side. At least we've got lights."
The floodwaters must have missed the wires that ran along the top of the tunnel to the power plant. Although the lights had flickered a few times, the power was still on. The wet and weary survivors were crowded into the stretch of tunnel that ran between the ice cave and the stairs. Despite his optimistic observation, Rollins knew they were short on time. He and the others were finding it more difficult to breathe. He attempted to divert his thoughts.
"What was that scientific discovery you were talking about?" he asked Skye. A dreamy look came to her eyes.
"I found an ancient tomb under the waters of the lake. I think it may have had something to do with the amber trade route, which means that trade contacts between Europe and the Mediterranean countries go further back than anyone has ever imagined. To Minoan or Mycenaean times, maybe."
Rollins groaned.
"Are you all right?" Skye said.
"Yeah, I'm fine."
"Oh, hell, no, I'm not.
The only reason I'm here was to do a story on the subglacial observatory. Then they found the body in the ice, which would have been a major exclusive. Then a thug posing as a reporter gun-whips your pal Renaud and floods the tunnel. Wow, my stuff would have been picked up all over the world. I would have been the next John Krakauer. Publishers would be pounding on my door with book deals. Now you tell me about the Minoan angle."
"I don't know that it's Minoan," Skye said, trying to ease his distress.
"I could be wrong."
He shook his head sadly. A TV reporter who had been listening to the conversation said, "Don't blame you for feeling bad, but put yourself in my place. I've got video of the body and the French guy getting smacked with the gun." Another reporter tapped his tape recorder.
"Yeah,
and I got the voices all on tape." Rollins stared at the fire hose snaking past their feet.
"I wonder if we could use a water jet to melt a tunnel through the glacier."
Thurston was sitting next to Rollins. He chuckled and said, "I've already done some calculations in my head. It will take us about 3 months if we work steadily."
"Do we get time off for Sundays and holidays?" Rollins asked.
Everyone laughed, except for Renaud.
Rollins's offbeat humor reminded Skye of Austin. How long had it been since she left the ship? She glanced at her watch and realized that only a few hours had elapsed. She had been eagerly looking forward to their date. She'd been entranced by the rugged profile, the pale, almost white hair, but it went beyond physical attraction. He was interesting, a study in contrasts. Austin had a quick sense of humor, and he could be warm and gentle, but she detected diamond hardness behind the twinkle in the blue eyes. And of course there were those magnificent shoulders. She wouldn't be surprised if he could walk on the bottom of the sea. Her eyes shifted to Renaud, who was at the far end of the attractiveness spectrum. He sat on the other side of the tunnel, nursing his swollen hand. She frowned, thinking that the worst part of this whole affair was being entombed with an insect like Renaud. The thought depressed her, so she rose and walked to the staircase that led down to the main tunnel. Black water lapped over the top of the staircase. Not a chance of escape. She became depressed again. Looking for a diversion, she sloshed through puddles and climbed the ladder to the ice cave. The glacier was already starting to retake its lost territory. New ice had formed in jagged icicles where there was none before. The ice had thickened and the body was no longer visible in its tomb. The helmet was still in its container. She picked it up and held it under a light where she could see the etchings. They were intricate and finely executed, the work of a master. The design struck her as not being simply decorative. There was a rhythm to it, as if it were telling a story. The metal seemed to pulsate with a life of its own. She got a grip on her rampaging thoughts. Lack of air was making her imagine things. If only she had more time, she could figure it out. Damn that Renaud! She carried the helmet back into the tunnel. The walk in the thin air had exhausted her. She found a spot against the wall, propped the helmet beside her, and sat down. The others had stopped talking. She could see their chests heaving as they sucked the anorexic air into their lungs. She found that she was doing the same, gulping like a fish out of water, but still not meeting the demands of her lungs. Her chin dropped, and she fell asleep. When she awoke, the lights had finally gone out. So, she said to herself, we will die in darkness after all. She tried to call out to the others, to wish them a farewell, but she didn't have the strength. She fell asleep again.